Welcome to the Eye on Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, we've got some actual basketball to talk about. I mean, it's preseason basketball, but it's basketball nonetheless. But before we do that, I just want to let you know that Tara Reid tweeted, me and my boys shooting our new show. It's a picture of her, Andrew Dice Clay, and Tom Green, which I don't know how you get more 90s than that. I know Dice
was not just 90s, but like bad 90s.
Yeah, I know Dice was a little more towards the early 90s, late 80s, but that's still very 90s.
That's one of those, it's not the end of civilization, but you can see it from there. That's...
Yeah, I just imagine that Blind Melon is playing in the background of wherever they are.
I imagine Salt and Pepper. That's what I
imagine. Oh, okay. Just push it on loop.
Just push it. Problem where I wind up Salt and Pepper and TLC, sometimes I conflate songs even though TLC does not rap.
Right. I mean, Left Eye a little bit, but...
A little bit. For the most part.
Yeah. Most part was a lot of harmony. We had a good weekend.
Yeah. It was. We had basketball-like substance.
Yeah, it's basketball-esque.
Yeah.
We got to see Derrick Rose.
We did get to see Derrick
Rose. He's capable of walking, in case you were doubting that.
And looked good.
Yeah, he looked really good. There was a little rust, but, you know, 5 of 12, 13 points, I believe, in 20 minutes. But that's a solid outing for a guy coming off an ACL tear 18 months ago.
I will say, I've never seen a guy come back from an ACL tear and just be like, oh, man, he does not look the same. Like, under the age of, like, 30. I've never seen when Shumpert came back, and this is what always happens is, I mean, I did this because it's easy and it gets lots of retweets, but a guy will come back and make an athletic play because he's an athletic human being that trains every single day for years to be as good as he is. And it's looks pretty good to me. Ha ha ha. And like the reality is it's like, well, that's not really indicative.
Yeah. I mean, where
his knees at?
Rubio came back in December and was just on fire. Like just in terms of his play, not necessarily shooting, but was just amazing. It was like he had never left, like he had never had an injury. He racked up, I think, 9 assists in limited minutes. Like, he was just incredible. And then the next game happened, and he was quite awful. Like, really, really bad. And it's, you know, you forget, like, the guy bounces back in the first game, has a great first game, and you're like, oh, he's fine. But it's really, it's kind of the entire journey of it all. It's how does he respond the next day? How does he respond the next game? Like, there's just so much that goes into it that the first looks can be deceiving, but... There was news that after the day after their game that Derrick Rose felt no soreness at all. He felt really good. So those are positive signs. He's also had 18 months to get over it and to train. So that helps him because it's usually about twice the amount of time most guys have or most guys choose to take. But those are all really good signs.
For me, the biggest sign was that he was driving against guys like Roy Hibbert and Yamahimi, who's not as intimidating as Roy Hibbert, but against big guys and going fearlessly.
Yeah.
He did not have any sort of hesitation. He wasn't, oh, I better make sure I land right. He was just going at him. And
yeah,
that's
he was just
really
playing.
Good to see. That's yeah. really good to see.
Yeah, he had a couple of nice like little double pumps on the – hit a double pump on the baseline, kind of. He had that one driving on the right side, I think against David West. He had some nice plays. He looked good.
The N1 was the one that was really impressive to me. Everyone was like, oh, look, he dunks. I'm like, I'm not impressed with...
Right, he had a breakaway dunk. Like, that's not really that.
Yeah, like, if I did that, it would be impressive.
Right,
but...
if he dunked on somebody, that's more impressive. But a breakaway dunk, like, I mean, that didn't really... That wasn't the impressive part of his evening to me. But it was still, like, all of it was good.
It's like, it's great that he has leg strength, but, you know, I kind of need to see more, and... The M1, however, on the other side was that to me was he took contact, he weaved through defenders, he was making moves that require movement on the knee. He just he looked good, and the turnovers are going to happen because part of it everyone's like well he had some rust and he did, but I'm also like everyone does. Like I don't know a point guard that hasn't looked sloppy. Royce right now is posting a video of Patrick Beverley destroying.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
And part of that is that's going to come back to bite him because.
Yeah, there was a lot of.
He was not going full 100.
So. No, there's a lot of trash talking there. But I like for a guy like Beverly, and I actually have a spoiler, or a look ahead. I don't know what that is. I have a post on full court point guards going up Tuesday on CBSSports.com, and part of it is the mentality though. Like, yeah, Holiday's not going full speed. You can tell, but that it, to set the tone with a guy like Beverly or other guys around the league, like it doesn't matter whether you're going 100 or you're going 80. It, like this is it. This is kind of a new, like almost a throwback style that's coming back in terms of trying to disrupt offenses.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting that Holiday was the one that got tagged with that, because Iguodala mentioned to me that he thinks Holiday is the best full court defender in the league because he's really good at being able to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting to see Beverly doing the same thing to him.
Yeah, definitely. I think the most interesting thing from the Bulls game to me was how much they didn't go to Derrick Rose at all to start the game. I mean, there was it was a good, it felt like 7, 8, 9 possessions before they really went, like he was just going down, setting screens inside and kind of popping out, but not really as an option to the offense. They were looking more towards towards Boozer. They're looking more towards Dang. And I was just thought, like, it was such a tease. Like, it was such a tease. You just kept waiting for them to, like, do a high pick and roll with Rose and see what would happen. It was just like, no, he's kind of just bringing the ball across the court, handing it off, and going down to set a screen. I'm like, no, just go at somebody.
Yeah, I was a little concerned. I was like, why are they not?
Yeah.
You know, I was like, why is the ball-dominant point guard just handing it off, and we're seeing, you know, Luol Deng posting up and things like that. But actually, later I thought it was really kind of genius, because it was kind of a, to me, it kind of said, hey, let's let Derek run a little bit. Let's let him get past the jitters and just get in the flow of the game and not overthink it and not feel like he needs to produce. Because, you know, he does like a crossover pull-up jumper on the first play, and all of a sudden it's like, it's, you know, there's going to be that, oh no, what if it's gone? Like, there's that
right.
That risk of concern there, and Derek's probably not going to do that, because I don't think Derek's going to the type to overthink things. But I still think it's better to have them, you know, have him work into the system a little bit more gradually.
Yeah, completely agree. And overall, I mean, preseason, so it's not great basketball, but we had some pretty entertaining action.
I just like to see it. And I was talking about this with guys on the Hardwood Paroxysm thread, our email thread, that I use preseason to also get myself into game shape in terms of getting back into watching basketball, because you go so long over that summer without, you know, I try and get away almost completely. I'll do some nights where I go back and watch some video, but in general, I'm trying to like not watch a lot. And so it helps me to get back in the flow of not just how to watch the game and how to track stuff off ball and those different rotations, but also managing Twitter, setting up our video system, stuff like that. So it's actually kind of nice to have games which aren't, you know, hugely important to be able to do that stuff with. On that Bulls game, I thought Jimmy Butler looked great.
Yeah, he's such a solid player. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be like all-star caliber, but he's one of those role players where you can see, like, if he went to any team, like any team, it doesn't matter the team, it doesn't matter their makeup, you can put him on any team and he will find a way to be a key role player for them. Like, he's so, so good defensively. He doesn't try to overdo anything on offense. It's almost Kawhi Leonard light, you know?
I love having a guy that can defend that well as a shooter.
Yeah.
And the Paul George comparisons are unfair, as most comparisons are.
Yeah, they're just wrong, too. I mean,
George is ahead of him, and he's a different type of player. But I really do like Butler as a perimeter weapon, that you know, an elite threes and D guy. I think he can get there.
Oh, absolutely.
I think he could be there. And for me, it's also a matter of this brings so much to the Bulls. And now, you know, I'm taking a few weeks off from power rankings to let preseason kind of shake everything out. Right now, and it's one preseason game, and I'm not saying I'm overreacting. I had the Bulls lower in power rankings, but based mostly on I needed to see Rose back. I didn't know what they would look like. I needed to see how the team functioned and how Rose looked. And knock on wood, if things continue with Rose, that's going to prompt a rise from me. And seeing Butler's improvement, again, it's preseason, it's one game. I'm just saying, I wanted to see if Butler would improve, and he's shown that he has because of the skill set things that he's done. And that's different from production.
Yeah.
That's kind of the gap that everyone kind of misses. That's what he used preseason for, is go, oh, he added this thing. That's kind of cool. Like, we'll see if it works, right? Like, JaVale looked great with his footwork last night in a preseason game. I'm going to need to see a little bit more before I start thinking that JaVale's a post presence.
He was also going against Robert Sacre, Jordan Hill, Chris Cato.
Yeah. Well, he gave Powell a nice up and under at one point and drew a foul. And the part of that is, and we'll talk about the Lakers a little bit more here in a minute, but JaVale always oddly plays well against Pau Gasol. I don't understand it. It's just one of those things that kind of happened. JaVale plays well against two guys in the league that I know of, Pau Gasol and Tim Duncan, and those are both elite players that play. But his best games always seem to come against those two. It's very odd.
Yeah, I mean, even that opening round, what was it, 2 years ago, when the Lakers and Nuggets faced off in the first round of the playoffs, they had just gotten JaVale. And he was going at Andrew Bynum. He was going at Pau Gasol. And just, like, he had an amazing series.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the series that got him a contract.
That's definitely the series that got him a contract. It was not his time in Washington.
No. It's funny you mentioned...
Back on the Bulls for a minute, I want to ask, you know, Yahoo posted an article over the weekend talking about the dysfunction. And we kind of knew a little bit of this with the fact that they let Ron Adams, the assistant coach, go... which was not, like, that's one of Thibodeau's closest buddies. And Rose liked him, too. And it looked like a power play from Gar Foreman and John Paxson in the front office, which is usually a power play from Jerry Reinsdorf in disguise.
Yeah.
And there's a Lou Alding situation hanging overhead. Does the Lou Alding situation concern you at all? Like, there's at least a possibility that the situation could get untenable to the point of a trade.
I don't think it will. I don't think Lou's that type of guy. I don't think he'll let it get to that point, but there is some concern that it can be a distraction. I think that there's so much emphasis on contract extensions happening in the preseason, like, and most of that is usually off of rookie deals, but because you can sign an extension later if you're a veteran off your rookie deal, right? But there's just so much talk because you're not in the flow of basketball yet. I think once the season starts and they get off to they're going to get off to a good start. I think the Bulls are probably the third best team in the East. You could convince me they're the second best team. I'm very high on them this year. I think they're going to be so good that story is just going to go away. Now, if they struggle, or if Lou struggles, or if Lou's just, dropping 20 a game, he's the perfect complement to Rose, and all this, maybe then it comes back because it's a contract year for him. But I really don't expect it to be a big of a deal, because it just seems like those stories with the Chicago Bulls just kind of go away, if that makes sense.
I was just about to say, I think what's going to happen is the same thing that always happens, which is the Bulls completely... Not completely. They mistreat their talent in terms of how they approach these negotiations, and don't go out of their way to make them feel good and loved and appreciated, and don't reward them for the hard work and things that they've given to the organization. And then somehow these guys never make them pay for it. Like, Tibbs could have been like, F you, I'm done. I'm on my way. I'm going somewhere else. And I mean, if he left as a free agent, What do you think that like he would fetch on the open market? I mean,
$7-8 million a year, easy.
The Lakers would throw Mike D'Antoni overboard so fast it would just be insane.
They would tie an anchor to him.
Yeah, there would be a ridiculous amount of attention to try and get Tibbs, and yet after all this, he signed the extension and he's going to be there a while. And they do this with players periodically, and this goes back to – I wrote about this over the weekend. This goes back to Jordan and Pippen and Jackson. This is how they treated them. And that may be a part of kind of where this function comes from, is Jerry Reinsdorf maybe like, I played hardball with Michael Jordan. Do you really think I'm going to bend to you?
Right. And he gave up on a three-peat. Like, or they three-peated. He gave up on the chance of bringing it back for a fourth, because at a certain point, egomaniacal owners are going to be egomaniacal owners. Like, it's just eventually these guys like to show who's in boss, and that's probably how they became rich enough and wealthy enough to own pro sports.
Yeah, but Reinsdorf drives his hard bargain, and it always seems to work out for him. So I can see it being okay, but I think it's something to bear watching, especially, if it comes down to it and the Bulls are looking at their financial situation. That's going to be, I think, interesting to watch, right, is let's say Jimmy Butler plays exceptionally well, and he especially plays well in certain lineups where he plays at three, okay? Yeah. If you're looking at the situation and you say to yourself, wait, we've got Butler, we're going to have to give him an extension. We know he's going to play longer than Lou. He's going to be healthier than Lou. Dane's going to want this big money. We can get trade value now. Do you go ahead and shell out and just like keep things the same and risk shelling out or just losing Lou Alding in free agency? to kind of pursue, because that's been the question with Reinsdorf, is how far in the tax is he willing to go? He dipped his toe in last year.
Right.
But just a teeny, just a tip, just to see how it felt.
They're significantly into the luxury tax this year.
Yeah. And so how he kind of decides to go forward in terms of whether he's willing to spend big money to actually go ahead and win a championship with Rose, I think it's going to be very interesting to see, and that's something that's going to play out, and it could have impacts on the trade deadline. Something to keep an eye on.
Yeah,
I tend to agree with you that I think it'll probably play out because, like you said, Dang's just a guy that goes in and does his work, but I think it's worth keeping an eye on.
We still have a full year to figure out what his value is, but what do you think Jimmy Butler would get in restricted free agency? Like, how much – because you, in order for the Bulls not to match, you kind of have to go overboard, right? Especially with Reinsdorf. I mean, I think you can – if you put out a big offer to Butler, Reinsdorf is so luxury tax weary, or at least has been historically. Maybe he changes tune. I doubt it, though. That I don't think he even thinks about matching because Butler is not a star name. But, could he get 9-10 a year? Is that ridiculous?
My gut reaction, and now I'm thinking this is probably high. My gut reaction was 444.
Wow.
Would you rather have Tyreke Evans or Jimmy Butler?
Oh, I'd rather.
In a modern NBA, would you rather have Tyreke Evans or Jimmy Butler?
Oh, I'd love Tyreke, but I'd take Butler.
Yeah, and so if Tyreke got 444 based on upside, Butler's still young, still improving, and is a proven 3-and-D guy.
Yeah, I mean, you still don't know. As dynamic as Tyreke Evans has been in seasons, you still don't know what you have with him, right? Like, you can never peg him into, like, he's not the franchise guy. You don't know if he's, we don't know yet if he's going to be a six-man type, you know, success story. You know he's talented. It's just that no one has really figured out how to use him other than a 1-4 flat and, you know, hope he makes the right play. And that didn't even work out. Like, that got, you know, the Kings, I don't know, 23 wins, 25 wins, something like that in his rookie season, which isn't bad for what they were, but it's not great. But with Butler, you know, like, I've got a guy who plays amazing perimeter defense. I've got a guy who can hit the three, who doesn't try to do too much. Like, that's the kind of role player you can spend that type of money on.
Here's a kind of a great way to think about how the new CBA is affecting things. So the Spurs are going to give Kawhi Leonard a max contract. He may take some off the top because he's nice and he knows what the system's provided him.
Yeah.
But they will pay whatever is necessary to get Kawhi back. So I'm trying to think what it's going to wind up being.
Five.
They probably won't be eligible for the five. So it'd be like four.
It's like 456 or something like that.
Yeah, 456, 460, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
Based off of that number, you know, could Jimmy Butler be as good as Kawhi Leonard? Like, that's a legitimate question. I don't think, and bear in mind, I do want to see more from Butler. Like, I'm still like, well, it's one preseason game and he had a good season last year. But if he had a really good year last year, my hesitation was, well, let's see if he continues it next year. And then he comes back in and his first thing in his first preseason game is, oh, he looks stronger, he looks more confident, and he looks like he has more control.
Yeah.
Well, Those are tangible things you can see that have an actual impact that aren't, based on production, you know? So I think that there's value there, but I think it's interesting to look at. Kawhi probably would not get that much of a contract from other teams because how these guys fit into different systems matters. And maybe that's like a good thing, is that it's encouraging teams to pay their own guys more money than they're going to get on the open market because of their value to them.
Yeah, especially when you factor in system and a guy's willingness to buy into a system. You know, Kawhi and the Spurs are kind of a perfect storm fit. Like, I'm not saying he wouldn't have been as good somewhere else, but I don't know he would have been as good as fast. And it just, like, with his personality, with what they want, I think the fact that they don't want him to talk to the media, he's like, oh, I love you guys, thank you. Right. I mean, he just doesn't have that mentality. And so it's kind of situations like that, it shows, like, hey, if a team has a culture and they have a system they believe in that is a long-term, you know, solution, if you buy in, you'll get paid. If you buy in, they will most likely reward you. Now, in terms of, like, the Butler-Kawhi comparison, I don't think Butler will really approach Kawhi Leonard in terms of impact and production. But if he's 75% of what Kawhi does for the Spurs, that's really good. Like, that's an excellent role player that you can throw $10, $11 million a year at. And I think that, and even if he made it to Kawhi level and what we think Kawhi is going to be, I wouldn't be that shocked. I just don't think it's going to happen, but I'm generally pretty pessimistic about that kind of stuff. I don't know if you've noticed that before, but I think most likely, you know, three quarters of what Kawhi does, that's an awesome role player. That's an awesome 3-and-D guy.
I love that we spent like twice as much on time on Jimmy Butler as we did on Derrick Rose.
Well, with Derrick, I mean, it was like, is he going to look good? Yeah, he looked good, even though it's preseason. All right, he didn't feel any soreness. Like, what else is there to say? Like, we know how good he is. We know how good they are when he's captaining the ship. Like, I don't know. I don't really have any doubts, even though it's so early. Like, I never really doubted it in the first place because he took 18 months to come back.
Right, better be all right by now. Yeah. That's what my wife said. I said, oh, Rose looked good. She's like, he should.
Yeah, he took a year and a half.
Like, if I took an 18-month vacation, my first day of work would be awesome.
By the way,
really fair. I was like, it's like an 18-month sick leave. She's like, all right, that's fair.
Friday night, I had the most solid 8.5 hours of sleep I've ever had. Like, I didn't wake up once. It was like I woke up refreshed. Like, I rarely wake up refreshed. It felt like an 18-month layoff. It really did. Like, I Saturday came, I was like, preseason's here, I'm ready to go.
Nice. Before we do Lakers, and we got two games to talk about with them, well, and there's other stuff to talk about with that situation.
Sure.
You and I both have complaints about the thing with things relating to Pelicans Rockets.
Yes.
First off, I want to say that the Pelicans jerseys look much better than I expected them to be. I was very bleh on them when they came out.
Yeah, they look all right. Them,
they look really good. Yeah. Okay, we live in 2013.
Yes, we do.
I have access to more media than I could ever possibly even consider consuming.
Yes, you do.
I could watch stuff constantly.
Yeah.
Today for 24 hours and just about basketball and not even scratch the surface of the stuff that's out there of stuff I have not seen to watch about basketball from YouTube clips, videos, and online services and TV and everything. So explain to me, I want to know this. Yesterday, they ran Sixers versus whatever team it was that they played. I don't care. And they replayed that same exhibition game over again. We haven't seen Rockets Pelicans at all on NBA TV. If you don't have access to various services, there's no way to watch Rockets Pelicans. That makes no sense to me. In 2013, Dwight Howard's first game with the Rockets, I should be able to watch that whenever I want.
Yeah, that's it's frustrating because I think you and I agree that the NBA is kind of the best sport to consume, right? Like, the NFL is the most popular, but in terms of just, like, all of the factors of it, the drama, the athletic feats on a play-by-play basis, you know, like, you get some amazing plays in football, but I think in I guess baseball to a certain extent, although it's a different type of game, in basketball, it's more of a constant athletic feat after athletic feat, right?
Yeah.
It shouldn't be the NBA on their online stuff, and they're great at promoting online. They give us all the YouTube access and rights that we shouldn't have. I mean, unless you're posting, you know, video of a fight, they pretty much let you keep anything up there. I mean, the generosity they have with the basketball fans and the online presence is really just amazing. You couldn't ask for anything more in that sense. However, you look at the NFL Sunday Ticket and you look at MLB.tv, they are so far ahead of what the NBA does in terms of their games being, I mean, and they're changing it this year. You had the story about, you know, the nationally archived games. The breaking
story, thank you very much.
Breaking story of nationally archived games, and you know, we found out you can pick your own feed for which broadcast you want. Like, the improvements are coming, it seems like, but it's still like the fact that you can't get Rockets Pelicans unless you have the subscription options that you mentioned, it's ridiculous. Like, they've got it. They've got to at least be able to catch up to that product, because they, in my mind, they have a better product. Like, I really am steadfast. Like, I love the NFL. I really do. I am ride or die with every Niners game. Like, I watch whatever I can. I'm on the Red Zone channel all Sunday long when I'm not viewing the fine programming on CBS. And and like, I will watch that all day, and I do. But I think the reason the NFL is so popular is because gambling on it is so prevalent. It's so much easier to do in terms of like the amount of games you gamble on, and because they have the best fantasy sport. Like, they really do. And you can play incredible fantasy football on CBSSports.com. That is the way it is so digestible for fans. And you know, it's every Sunday, and you know, Thursday night it's going to be a crappy game, and Monday night's going to be probably a crappy game, but every Sunday it's going to be awesome. So the NBA can't compete in that sense. But I mean, I'm a little biased here, but the NBA has such a better product to me. So a product that should be easily digestible for all fans, any casual fan, any diehard fan, and they don't always come through in that respect. Like, maybe they will fix that with this year's league pass, but I'm with you. Like, it's ridiculous that we didn't get at least one replay of that.
I mean, I'm sure there's a rights issue somewhere. These things are always more complicated than we think it are. Everyone always likes to say, like, why don't they just do this? And it's, well, there's
yeah, they're locked into a contract right now. They have to change the contract when it comes up, and you hope that they'll change it in the right way. But there are legal consequences to what they have right now.
So I'm sure that there's some sort of – it just – NBA TV in particular baffles me, because I think NBA TV, when they hit, it's this beautiful, wonderful
experience. Oh, God, yeah. I will have it on during the day – you know, kind of all day long, unless there's a crappy movie I want to watch, which is often. But like, they do usually do a pretty good job of putting content on there.
You know, the 80s and 90s stuff has been great. I love their rookie program. I actually don't mind the real training camp programs.
I like that a lot.
We're obsessive, so we're a little bit outside the box. But I do feel like, also, you know, I think that there's a really high value in rewatchability to NBA games.
Yes.
I don't think almost anyone wants to – NFL, I think they do. But MLB, I don't think anybody really wants to rewatch a baseball game.
Yeah, not usually. I mean, they do a good job on MLB.tv of condensing a baseball game to – like, you can watch the most important aspects of a game in 15 minutes. Like, they do a great job of that. But if you're going to – like, unless it's a really classic game, you're probably not going to rewatch 3.5 hours of a baseball game.
Yeah, I would rewatch baseball games. Like, back when I was more into baseball in the mid-2000s, like, with, you know, like the Astros-Cardinals series and stuff like that. It was riveting, riveting, riveting stuff. And so there's just that tension and everything that I would rewatch. But I just think that there's potential there, especially, like, again, yesterday, it's don't re-show the Sixers preseason game against a European opponent.
There are no diehard Sixers fan that wants to do that.
No, no one hates themselves that much.
They saw it once. That's good enough. Like, just throw something else on there.
And your complaint about not about the game, but related to the events that around the first game from Dwight's new Rockets team. By the way, Dwight Howard, thanks to Adam Reisinger at ESPN, Dwight has not won a preseason game since 2011.
Yeah. That's a choker. That's a stat. He can't win. He can't win the important training games.
What would the phrase be? He comes up small in small moments.
Sure. He comes up tiny in small moments. Small moments. There we go. Like you just informed us a few minutes ago. It's 2013, right?
Yeah.
There is no reason for people to still believe that Dwight Howard, A, is bad at offense, or two, has no postgame. There are things wrong with Dwight's game. He's a terrible free throw shooter, although it got kind of historically bad after the back injury, so I'd like to see if he's actually going to be around a 49% free throw shooter, or if he'll kind of creep back up to the mid-50s, high 50s, low 60s that he kind of hovered around, which is still not good, especially with the amount of free throws he takes, but it's, you know, it is a difference than
you need to 4%. You need to be at like 1 point per possession if you get fouled.
Yeah, exactly. And so that is a problem. He, as I've mentioned 100 times in the past, like he is incredibly physically strong, but he has really tiny legs. I don't think some guys just aren't capable of adding mass to their legs. Like, they just aren't. Like, I don't doubt that Dwight Howard has tried everything he can to get a lower base, you know, to get a stronger lower base. But that, like, he just can't do it. So because of his skinny legs, like, he can push guys around with his upper body all he wants, except that's a foul. Whereas when you root somebody out of position with your lower body, that's not a foul. And he can't really do that all that well against strong post defenders. So it hurts his post game, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have a post game. And, you know, he has some issues with touch, but for the most part, he's really good in the post. Like, aside from last year when he was coming back from back surgery and he had a torn labrum in his left shoulder, I believe, which was his left shoulder? I think it was his left shoulder. Whatever shoulder it was, it takes away half of your offensive capabilities because he can spin left, he can spin right, he can drop step left, he can drop step right. Like, he can do all of these things and go with either hand. Like, he has, I would say, 5 or 6 solid moves. If you have 5 or 6 solid moves, no, you're not Hakeem Olajuwon, you're not Kevin McHale, but you are a good post player with a post game. It doesn't mean you're not. It doesn't mean you're perfect, and it doesn't mean you're better than Powell's post game, or, you know, or maybe even Marcus Saul's post game. But you're good, and we have to get this idea that hasn't been correct since 2009, that he's a bad post player, out of our head. You just do. He's not Shaq. He'll never be Shaq. That doesn't mean he's bad.
We got to throw out last year's numbers.
If he's the same this year as he was last year, and he's, you know, supposedly healthy now, then last year's numbers matter. But as of right now, he had so many injuries. I don't know how you can just lean on that and be like, nope, there's your evidence. That's crap.
Yeah, you can't really lean on last year. So here's kind of the opposite. Is for most of his career, I would look at Dwight Howard's game and really be unimpressed with his post game. And the reason was because entirely not around his footwork. He made so many strides on that between 2007 and 2009. And it was just – he just took leaps and bounds. And then 2010 and 11 were his peak years so far, and he was just superb in every area. He was dominant. I had him as co-MVP in 2011. He was magnificent because he'd add on all that. He came such a long way. It was just that he's never had great touch.
Yeah.
He's always trying. And he's worked on it. He used to just slam it off the backboard and off the rim, and he's learned. He gently kind of places it on the rim and lets gravity do the rest, and that's a very smart thing to do at his size. I hold him to higher standards, which are unfair because we hold him to the standards of the great centers of all time.
Yeah.
Because that's what we, you know, if you're the best in. If you're the best at your position in the NBA, you're going to get compared to guys that have come before. The next great shooting guard is going to get compared to Jordan. He's going to get compared to Kobe. He's going to get compared to Wade. He's going to get compared to whoever else comes next.
And that's unfair. And that's unfair for Jordan Crawford to have to go through. Right. It really is. But
you mean
that's
Nick
just,
Young? Is what you mean, Nick Young
or Nick Young too? Both of those guys. But that's the plight they're going to have. It's going to be the next Drexler Jordan. You know.
But then I would look at his offensive numbers, and it's like, no, he's really terrific. And if you go back, even his synergy numbers as you get more advanced, they were still really great. Last year, I'm looking at his numbers right now. He shot 43% in the post last year. I mean, that's
bad.
That's really rough. And that's, you know, you're not looking for 60%. You're looking for you know, the elite 52, guys.
52, 53, 55, somewhere around there.
Yeah, Kevin Durant, by the way, who posted 4 times a game, shot 53%. So he's good.
He's all right.
Kobe posted 5 times a game, shot 52%. Dirk, 50%. You wind up there between 46 and 48 for pretty decent. So 43 is it's not good. And when you factor in free throws, it gets worse, right? He gets fouled in the post, and then his points per percentage goes down because he's missing free throws.
Right.
So that really struggled. But. And this is a pretty typical thing, and you and I have talked about this, not to belabor us yelling about Twitter, but just there's such a huge gap between not being the absolute best, or to use a phrase that's overused in sports, but I think it still matters, not being elite.
Yeah.
Dwight Howard's not an elite offensive player because he doesn't have that variety of a game. His offensive impact is still incredible
huge.
Because of his size,
yes.
His ability to run the pick and roll, all of these things. If he's willing to run that pick and roll, I mean, they're going to be great. And also, man, I posted a play, a clip from that Rockets game versus the Pelicans. Harden inbounds, they inbound the ball to Harden on the right wing. He drops it to Dwight in the mid post. They bring the double, and as soon as they bring the double, Chandler Parsons cuts, and it's over. I mean, just done. And even if you bring a secondary defender from the weak side over to cover, there's a 50% chance that Parsons is going to draw the foul there. Team is going to be really good.
And might I add, NBA teams, they don't – most of them, Doug Collins aside, most of them – most coaches don't like to give up options on defense. Like, it's just not a thing. Like, if you ask Frank Vogel, what are you willing to give an offense, he's probably going to say nothing. You know, he's probably going to say, we're not willing to give offense anything. Like, teams are designed to take away everything, ideally, right? Now, when stuff breaks down, then you have principles that change. But if Dwight Howard was a bad post player, they would not be bringing the double the instant he touches the ball. They just wouldn't. They let guys go one-on-one in the post whenever they can if they think that that guy can't do anything in the post. And if you are a bad post player, that's what happens. This is not he's a big name, so he has a reputation that's unjustified. No, he has a very justified reputation amongst NBA teams. You ask that. Now, you can have a guy like Kendrick Perkins who is okay with battling Dwight in the post and having one-on-one and giving up 30 points. You know, like that's something Kendrick Perkins is okay with because he thinks that if he makes Dwight work for his 30 points and they take away the options around him, then that's a win. Because sometimes it is. But that, like, it's rare you're going to see double coverage for Dwight because teams are not stupid. Most teams are not
guys,
stupid.
How many guys in the league right now honestly have the ability to take and make a turnaround shot, a turnaround jumper out of the post through a double team?
Are we talking about centers or just anybody?
Centers. I mean, forwards/centers. I mean, you're really talking. Powell's the first name that comes to my mind.
Yeah, Powell and Mark are both up there. Duncan.
I don't even know Mark does well against a double. He doesn't have enough. Elevation on his jumper.
I guess it depends on how quickly he attacks, how quickly he recognizes the double, which should be pretty quickly. But and then how quickly he gets his move off. But maybe you take him out of the conversation. Duncan. I think Brook Lopez.
Duncan almost never goes to that kind of fadeaway, though. He only goes to the kind of – that weird – not weird, but that sidestep cross kind of hook hybrid thing that he does off the glass.
Yeah. I think that
– Kevin Love could probably get there.
Yeah, Love could probably do it. Al Jefferson would do it just because he doesn't pass that much. He'd rather shoot than pass out of a double team.
I mean, it's really rare, so.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's.
And to your point, if you're comparing Dwight with Hakeem Olajuwon, David Robinson, Patrick Ewing, Shaquille O'Neal, Wilt Chamberlain, like if you're comparing him with the elite of all elites all time, I agree. He's not there. Like, his defense is fantastic, but he's not there. I don't know that he will ever be a top 10 center for me. That doesn't mean he's bad. It really doesn't.
Anthony Morrow got time.
And he put up points.
26. I'm so excited. It's mostly because Tyreke got hurt and Eric Gordon's out. But still.
Free Anthony Morrow.
I'm really excited. I so want him to get time and be good. I'm excited about this Pelicans team. They're one of my teams I'm really getting excited about. Hey. Even though they keep having injuries.
You know who looks like an NBA player?
Who?
Austin Rivers.
He does look like an NBA player. I was so impressed watching the clips.
The improvements I wrote about in Summer League. Now that's just Summer League, and I mentioned that, but the improvements were, he showed some improvements and a better understanding of how to attack. And he wasn't great in the first preseason game, but he was 7 of 18 from the field, which is not that good. But he looked good. He looked like an NBA player, which he did not look like for most of last year.
No. He did not look like an NBA player at all. He looked really good.
That's another thing that kind of is driving me crazy lately is there is no transition period allowed for anything in the NBA. Like, if you struggle right away, you're done. Yeah. That drives me crazy.
Here's I based off of our conversation, I wanted to look something up because we compared Dwight to various people. You know, Shaq, he gets compared to Shaq too much. They're not the same player at all. He gets compared to all these great centers throughout time, like Hakeem and all this. It's like he's not that kind of guy. My big guy that I was wind up going back to, there's some interesting stuff when you compare Dwight Howard with Moses Malone.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
Per 36, I took Malone's 82 year, which is kind of the peak of his career,
yeah,
and Dwight's 2010 year, which is kind of the peak of his. And per 36, Dwight had 19 points, Moses had 27, but Moses was taking 9 more shots than him.
Whoa. They didn't foul Moses?
They did. He was a 76% free throw shooter.
Okay.
But he took less free throws per game than Dwight. And most of it was the fact that Moses got all of his points on tip-backs.
True. Yeah, he just threw it up against the glass.
He just killed guys by just constantly batting the ball in and just crushed them. So I think that there's really something to be said for 2011 was actually a little bit better of a year for him, and that was 23 points to Malone's 31. And he shot better from the field. He shot 59% to Malone's 52.
Yeah.
I mean,
and 59.6% from the free throw line that year, which is not good because he's taking 11 a game, but you're getting more than a point per possession, which technically means you're not wasting possessions.
Yeah, and I guess here's one. Dwight had a higher rebound percentage in that season than Malone did in 82.
Wow.
And had better per 36 and per game rebound numbers. So that's the guy we should probably compare him to.
Yeah, and I think that's I would still take Moses, but that is a more apt comparison. It's kind of like what would you say Moses is? Like he had some amazing peaks, but he's probably maybe in that third tier of elite centers, right? All time, top tier, you're going Russell, Shaq, Hakeem, Wilt. Secondary tier, you're probably going, Ewing, Robinson. I don't know if you're supposed to throw Duncan in there or not. I put
Moses in the second tier just because of the raw production and how much. I mean, I'm biased because I'm in love with Moses Malone's game, but 31 points, 15 rebounds per game.
That
was pretty good.
That's an okay season. You can get
it.
You can make an all-star team.
Three-time MVP, he's pretty decent. So.
Yeah, I mean, okay, Moses probably is in that second tier. I think Bill Walton's in there even despite the injuries. If Dwight makes that third tier of all-time centers, which probably puts him, I don't know, in that 11 to 15, 16, 17 range, something like that.
That's an amazing career.
That's really good. That's really good.
Getting back to your point, Austin Rivers looked great, and it's – yes, it's preseason, but God, he made a shot.
He made shots. He made 7 of them. That's an improvement.
Points were scored. I didn't get to see much of it, but I did like a lot of what I saw from everyone in that game. I just thought it was
Anthony Davis looked really good.
Oh yeah, big year coming for the Brow.
Yeah,
but man, I even though they lost, I still think that. The Rockets are going to be they may be better than I maybe anticipated.
Yeah, I liked what I saw out of Lynn. Harden was really good, obviously. I thought Dwight looked fantastic. A couple of mistakes here and there, but I thought overall he looked really good. It was surprising to see Omri Caspi make shots. He was like 9 of 10.
That one I'm just going to chalk up to preseason.
I'll admit it, even though I'm not a fan. Terrence Jones looked pretty good.
Yeah, he did look good. You know, who looked good in the first game actually was Serge Ibaka.
Oh yeah, he did look good.
He looked really good. I think I'm done trying to squash the hype on Ibaka, and I'm back on the Ibaka train that I was on in 2010. I think is when it was one of those years, whichever the cake year was. That was when I was like, hey, Ibaka's really good. And then everyone was like, he's an elite player, and I was like, slow your roll.
You're like, hold on a second.
Calm down. Everyone's always surprised that teams like Fibonacci are able to hang. I'm like, these teams are really good, and they're in the flow of their season.
They're professional teams that have professional players who are very good.
Yeah. Man, Bogdanovich looked good.
He's so good.
He's so good. Get that guy over into the real league.
Yeah. He's so good.
Reggie Jackson looked decent. I actually wasn't as impressed with Reggie Jackson as other people were. I was more impressed with Jeremy Lamb, to be perfectly honest.
Jeremy Lamb was terrible in the first half. He looked pretty solid in the second half.
Yeah. I just – if he hits shots and makes a few defensive plays, that's going to be big for them. They just need a little bit. They're going to get enough improvement from Durant and Westbrook and Ibaka to carry them further than I think most people expect.
Yeah.
They can just get a little bit from Reggie Jackson and Jeremy Lamb. They're going to be okay.
And I like me some Andre Roberson. Six rebounds in 12 minutes. He's a rebound machine at the wing position.
Let's talk about the team that everyone is raving about.
Yes, your Denver Nuggets. No, your Los Angeles Lakers.
Okay, first of all, this preseason back-to-back stuff has got to stop.
It sucks. It really sucks. The Wolves play like 4 games in 6 nights in the preseason, and then they have like a week off. This makes no sense.
I don't really understand why we have so many preseason games. I would rather us have longer training camps and then 3 preseason games.
Yes.
But I get it from the financial perspective, and I get it from, I think maybe coaches are kind of like, well, I'd like to be able to try some stuff out. But I still think the 3 preseason games get you there. 2 weeks of training camp, 1 week of preseason games, get like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule. It gets you in the flow. Monday, Wednesday, Saturday even. And then you're done.
Yeah.
And we're out. And then we start the season.
Even if you cut in half to 4 preseason games.
Yeah.
That would be fine.
Yeah.
I
think it's good. But this preseason, even with the Lakers holding out Nash and Gasol, like the rest of that team was just dog tired when they faced the Nuggets on Sunday.
Yeah. It's just an unnecessary thing for preseason. You guess you can make the argument of, hey, they have to play back to back in the regular season. Let's get some prepared for it. But that's just, it's just unnecessary. You know what's
the veterans are like, I'm not preparing for back-to-back.
Right.
So I'm just going to avoid them at all costs.
You know what's necessary, though? Nick Young with the ball in his hands.
That crossover.
Oh!
Was dirty.
Oh, there was that pullback. He made Harrison Barnes look like he was still in his rookie year. That was filth. Absolute filth.
Gross. Ugh.
It looked like a deleted scene from Hostel.
Xavier Henry, I can't. I just can't.
Hey, no, he looked good. You like Xavier.
I do. I want good things for him. And LA's a perfect place for him to get time. Powell looked fine.
Yeah, Powell played second game. He didn't play the first game. There's clearly some rust there. He didn't move all that well, I think, when he was getting shots up.
He also didn't give a damn. That was part of his. I'm watching it, and I'm just like, Powell is just like, do-do-do, turnaround jumper, dude, and he's still, like, scoring and being efficient. But Powell was very much like, don't care.
Yeah. I had a friend text me. He was like, you still like Nick Young after a 4-for-16 performance? I was like, 16 shots in 24 minutes? I love him.
He's going to be pretty spectacular to watch. I think he's gonna be a little bit like Nate Robinson was last year with the Bulls.
Ooh, I like that comparison.
Yeah, where everyone's like, oh, he's a joke. He's just a complete joke, and it's like the joke's working.
I kind of think he's gonna be a mix between Jesus and Fergie. he's just gonna be amazing. Sorry. I mean, I know.
That one got me. Jeez.
I know it's pretty obvious, but I am all in on Nick Young this year. In that system, with the doubts around Kobe playing early on, even when Kobe does play, like I think Nick Young is a guy that NBA players kind of trust to shoot the ball. And I think he'll gain Kobe's trust pretty quickly.
Are you high?
Kobe likes guys that can make shots. And Nick Young takes a lot of shots. He's not a great shooter, but he's a good 3-point shooter.
I actually made this point Saturday night or Sunday night. I actually think Kobe's going to be fine with Nick Young, because if you are who you are and you're not politicking and you're not about things that are other than the game.
Yeah.
And your mistakes are all based off of, I thought I could do more than I can. he never blames you, and he never gets mad. He never got mad at Bynum.
Kobe doesn't want guys who are unsure of what to do with the basketball. Nick Young knows what he's going to do.
That's why he got mad at Odom. Odom would make mistakes that were I don't know what to do, and then he screws up, and then Kobe would yell at him.
Yeah.
And Powell would make mistakes where he was unsure of what to do, and Kobe would yell at him. But with Bynum's shooting threes, and Kobe's like, he thought he could hit it.
Right. No, I don't think he's giving him the ball at the end of a game and saying, hey, why don't you take this one? But throughout the course of a game, like, I think he's absolutely going to get Nick Young involved. I don't think he's going to pass the ball to Chris Kaman once. But I think Nick Young, he's going to trust Nick Young. And by the way, let's say you're an announcer announcing a Laker game. And don't worry, I'll be careful on this. Let's say you're an announcer announcing a Laker game and Chris Kaman hits his first jumper. Don't let the fans think that that is a good thing. Because that is actually a bad thing, that people around the league have this consensus of, if Chris Kaman hits his first jumper and you're going against him, that's kind of the best thing that can happen to you in a game. Because he will continue to take it. Kaman is more effective, like, in the post, switching hands and stuff. If he's settling for 16-foot jumpers that are mildly contested, you will take that all day as a defense.
I also like, by the way, that Nick Young was 17 points on 9 shots in Saturday's game and was -6.
Yep.
And swagging out and just feeling awesome and really riling up the crowd and was -6. That's
not his fault. Sense. Not his fault at all.
Not his fault at all. Real quick on the Warriors, I'm really impressed with them. I think they look great. Harrison Barnes, it's one preseason game. He'll probably bounce back. He looked bad. I don't like him at the four. It's fine that it worked against those two particular teams in the playoffs. I don't like it in general. I just don't think it's a good fit for him. I think it's going to wear on his body, and he's going to struggle at that position. David Lee at 5 assists, by the way.
Yeah, I actually disagree. I like Harrison at the four. I think it's a more natural feel for him when he's on the court with Clay and Iguodala. I think that's when it will work. The chemistry with him and Iguodala wasn't there yet, which is understandable. They haven't played very long together, and that will probably get ironed out. But that combination at the 2-3 to start the game looked a little awkward to me.
Also, Harrison Barnes led the Warriors in plus-minus at +14.
There you go.
Who knows what I know? Iguodala, Klay Thompson is going to be absolutely devastating.
Woo.
It's when they get out on breaks and Thompson's running to the corner, it's going to be Harden Parsons-esque. It's going to be absolutely terrifying.
And Klay was great. He had one big dunk in transition. Like, he looked good. He's just a good player in transition. He's so smart. He reads the floor well as a guy filling the lane. He knows when to flare to the corner. He knows when to stop at the wing. He knows when to cut straight to the basket. That guy's just a very smart transition player, which sounds like it should be an obvious thing for most players, but you'd be surprised how many guys screw up spacing on a fast break.
Very true. And we're seeing a lot of these wings now like Butler and Kawhi are the half court threes and D's guy.
Yeah.
We're seeing now a lot of these wings which are like speed and threes and speed.
Yes.
Parsons is another guy that does really, he's exceptional at spacing the floor in transition and knowing when to cut and when to back out to the 3-point line. We're seeing that as kind of a developing skill set. I really like the Jermaine O'Neal Andrew Bogut set.
That was odd.
I loved it. I thought it was really effective. I think this can work.
Let's just remember that it's preseason. That was a weird combination. It worked. I guess it
against works. The Lakers.
Yeah, against Robert Sacre. I guess it looks good. I mean, it's a viable option. I think if Andrew Bogut is as healthy as he looked, like, he looks great. He's in fantastic shape.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Hopefully he stays that way. Hopefully he stays, healthy. But I just like watching him move. Like, he just looks.
They look as good as I thought that they would be. I think this team is going to be. Again, if you're like, it was preseason, we know.
Yeah, we're just talking about the way things look.
We're just going to talk about the things that we know.
Andre Iguodala, that guy fills out a Warriors jersey.
He looks good in it.
Those colors are great on him.
It's a really nice, and it's weird. You mentioned this earlier that there's a kind of a weird thing with how certain guys look in different uniforms.
Yeah,
like JJ Barea does not look good in a Timberwolves jersey.
No, it looks weird.
It's just odd. He looks like an olive that's gone bad.
Sure. Speaking of gone bad, Kobe Bryant's gone to Germany? That'll work.
Germany's bad? Is that what you're saying?
They were for a time. I think a little history lesson for you. The
going it was less than World War II. Germany was bad.
You know, it's just a mere 55 years ago. Going back for the platelets.
Yeah, undisclosed. First it came out as an undisclosed procedure at the beginning, and then, of course, it came out 30 seconds later that it's for the platelet stuff. Yeah. I'm not really surprised, but I'm ready to admit I was wrong. He's missing the preseason. He's missing the regular season opener. It's done. I'm out. Brian Shaw says he's done. He's not done, but he's going to miss it. He just had the platelet thing. He's clearly taking his time.
Yeah, which he should do. This is kind of what everyone was hoping he would do, and it's like this. No, he can bounce back. He can be, and I believe he can. But it's just a smarter play for him to take a little more time.
Yeah. Now I will say I will move the goalpost now and say December 15th he is 100% playing.
Yes, that's Rockets.
He will be whenever. Just December 15th is when I will say he is absolutely back. Oh, okay. I would say December 1st, I would put pretty 70% odds on it. Today, I did a massive breakdown of different team future odds at two gambling sites. Not that you should gamble, and if you do so, do it legally. And if you need help, please go get it at gamblersanonymous.org. But I did a massive breakdown of team futures, and there's some really weird stuff in there. Some really bizarre stuff. Like the Clippers are I think the third highest team to win. They're the third highest team in terms of odds to win the Western Conference. Okay. They're the second. They're the second highest team with the odds to win the Western Conference. But Bulls Clippers is 30-1.
Interesting.
Yeah, I did a whole breakdown of. Let's say that the Heat implode. Let's say for S's and G's, the Heat implode. Like what are we looking at in terms of odds? And it gets kind of interesting. 30-1 on Bulls Clippers is that one I was like, there was that little part of me that gambled that was like, hey, you know, that starts calculating. Can I drive to Vegas and get back before my kids out of daycare one day? Can I do that? And the answer is no. But it was. That was, and then, of course, the other side of my brain is like, that's a remarkably stupid bet. Like, why would you possibly gamble on that?
Right.
That's my favorite gambling story in terms of how my brain works is when my wife and I got together, I told her I really wanted to put $100 in the World Cup on Ghana to beat Brazil.
Jesus Christ.
Because it was 500-1. And I was like, it's soccer. How can it possibly – how can the odds be that big? The 500-1. And then, you know, now I'm like, oh no, as not a big soccer fan, in case you were wondering.
Apparently.
Before we go, I saw Gravity this weekend.
I want to see it so badly. I was talking to people at the coffee shop we frequent on Saturday, and they had all seen it, and they all were like, I want to go again. It was amazing. It's apparently, like the phenomenon of them talking about it made me excited.
Okay, they're sick people, though. They're sick. They're sick, disturbing people.
Okay. I mean, that's very possible.
You should not want to go see it again.
What?
I spent the entire bear in mind this is from my perspective as someone with anxiety issues. I spent the entire time chewing on things. Like I looked down after the movie and realized that I've been biting my forearm for 15 minutes.
There's a big chunk out of the armrest.
Yeah, exactly. I bit my nails, my knuckles, my forearm. I bit my coat at one point. There were coat marks in my coat. It is a phenomenally tense film, but it is also brilliant. I love the director. Go see it in 3D. It is incredible.
You know, it was not tense? I went to game one of the WNBA Finals last night, and the Lynx, my Minnesota Lynx, blew out the Atlanta Dream.
The Dream are terrible in finals games.
It was a clinic. Maya Moore. Yeah. Maya Moore needs absolutely zero space. She's like Steph Curry. She needs zero space to get a shot off and make it.
Maya Moore is amazing. I love watching her play.
KD's lady friend, Monica Wright, was fantastic. Had like 20 off the bench. Simone Augustus was great. Simone Augustus is one of those players that if you're a basketball fan, I don't care if you don't like the WNBA, you kind of got to see her play in person if you get a chance. She's She's just fun to watch in person.
Was it a stomach punch, an ass kicking, or a face kicking?
Oh, it was a face kicking. Just, yeah. I mean, they were way more physical, just created a lot of turnovers. What's her name? Angel McCautry, I think, is the best player on the Dream. And she went full John Starks game seven. Like, she was just chucking shots.
Oh.
Just really bad offense. It was kind of amazing. I actually became a fan of her game as she was playing.
I'm starting to worry you have a problem.
Like, oh, I definitely have a problem. You know, you mentioned the Gamblers Anonymous. You know, get help if you're a gambler. I'm gambling on Gunners.
You're a Gunners. You need Gunners Anonymous?
Yeah, I might need Gunners Anonymous.
You got the piece going up Tuesday on point guards. I'll have a thing that kind of goes along with that, with the best guys that are young, looking at them. It's going to be an exciting week for us. We got basketball back, Zach.
I'm excited. Thanks, Matt.